Hello, and welcome to Radio SGN, our podcast where we talk about gay news, gay trending topics, pretty much anything gay. I'm Lindsay Anderson. I'm one of your hosts. I am a staff writer with the SGN, and joining me is my co-host / our acting editor,
Benny Loy.
I'm sorry, I always make you say your name. I think it's fun.
No worries.
Let's see. My pronouns are she, her.
And I'm she, they.
And we're going to talk about the news. Like, first up in the news, though, something that has been brought to our attention. It's very sad. So we're starting pretty low vibes. Hater Tot, the kitten from TikTok, has died, which is tragic and not the news you wanted to wake up to. I'm sure you all know Tater Tot, very fluffy, curmudgeon-y looking kitten that had like multiple broken legs and was so sweet, so cute.
And they went viral because of these photos, these super cute photos of this, you know, grumpy looking kitten.
Yes.
With these giant leg casts.
Yes. Unfortunately, yeah, Tater Tot has crossed the rainbow bridge. And we're talking about this because, Benny, you found out about Tater Tot's passing by seeing a fan art that somebody posted.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I follow a lot of artists, and a lot of my news about Tater Tot has been through fan art of Tater Tot. And then I saw a fan art of Tater Tot, but with angel's wings and a halo. And I'm like, this is a weird addition to Tater Tot. And then I opened up the comments, and that's how I found out. And there was a bunch of other people in the comments that were just like, no, this can't be the way that I find out. So rest in peace, little buddy.
R.I.P.
You did your best.
I feel like it's such a strange, like, facet of internet culture that we're in now, because, like, it used to be, you know, you have your own pets, right? And when your own pets die, it's just devastating. Honestly, I think that we need, like, bereavement time, like off from work, paid time off work when pets die, that is equal to, yes, like losing a human family member, because it's just that devastating. But, you know, then you've got like friends' pets and like family members' pets, and it like still hurts when they die, you know, like a dog that you know, that's not like your dog, but like,
yeah,
like, okay, my best friend is a very old Malamute that she's had since we were in middle school, and he is pushing it. He's old, and I'm dreading the day when I get the message that he has passed away, because I know it's going to ruin my week, you know. But now we're in this era where you become like emotionally attached to animals that you've never met in person, but they have like an internet following, like Grumpy Cat, you know. Like, I am a person that follows way too many of these animals on all social media platforms. The only person I know that follows more is my mom, because she exclusively follows Cocker Spaniels, which is really weird. But yeah, I remember I've had a couple experiences with this. One was, there was this group of like dogs in New York City. They were all like rescue dogs, and they were rescued from puppy mills. And their thing was like, they had tongues that stick out of their mouth. And the main dog, they were treated kind of like the Kardashians. Like, they were just so fancy, like living their best lives. They had ridiculous names. So there was Toast, the main dog. And Toast had a big fancy wedding that was like broadcast on national TV. Then there was Underpan, and then there was Muppet, and something to the dog. And I remember Toast died the day that I came home for my first winter break from college, and it, like, devastated my whole winter break, because I was crying, because I was like, Toast died. And my dad was like, what's wrong with you? The worst instance of this happening was, did you know Esper the Borzoi?
Oh, yeah, I heard about that one.
The long snoot dog, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the one that the meme that was based around? Like the, let me do it for you.
Yes, yes, her. And she was like the little Russian lady, and she'd wear a little thing, and she's super popular on TikTok. Okay.
A little babushka.
So I feel partially responsible for her death, because I commented or messaged her owner on TikTok, because he does like these videos where he would do like, here's the top 10 smartest dog breeds. Here's the top 10 largest dog breeds. And I was like, can you do the top 10 longest living dog breeds? And he was like, yes. And he was making this video, and then Esper died in the middle of the video. And then he posted the video of the longest lived dog breeds. And he's like, this is really ironic, because Esper just died. And I was like, oh my God, I fucking did somehow.
That's your legacy now.
I know.
You're never going to beat that.
I know. I'm like devastated. I was so sad.
No.
So I'm very sad about Tater Tot, but I'm at least glad that I didn't, you know.
Yeah. I've never had anything that close to that kind of thing. But when I was writing my novella that I was under contract for a couple of years ago, at the time when I started it, I had recently experienced like 2 deaths in my family. And so I was like, I feel like I want to have like a running theme of like dealing with grief in this story.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm dealing with. And so then I finished it. We had it ready for publication. And then the pandemic happened.
Oh, man.
And I'm just like, did I somehow accidentally manifest more grief into the world?
That's trippy. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to have a virtual launch because of it.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. But I was just like, maybe I should test this theory and the next thing I write, have it be about just like really wonderful things.
Have really wonderful things happen and it worked?
I haven't written a big piece like that yet. So,
well, but the maybe world needs it, Benny. So yeah. Get on that, please. Write us something wonderful.
Just a whole story with no conflict.
Yeah. Maybe the story is like student debt gets resolved and...
Yeah. The title will be And Nothing Bad Ever Happened.
Yes. I like that. That's so good. We're going to get on such a tangent here, but that reminds me of this episode. Did you watch Arthur growing up?
A little bit, but I barely remember it.
Oh, I have like a weird memory for things when I was really little. And I remember an episode of Arthur where this one girl wanted to like write a short story where nothing bad happened. And everybody was like, you can't do that. You need conflict in your story. And then she wrote it anyways. And then it got like published. Like people loved it. I was like, that reminds me of your dream to write a happy short story. And I want that. I want a happy story.
I'm going to manifest it into the world.
Thank you. Please make me the main character and make me just really rich and happy and I can retire so young.
I'll do it.
That's what should happen. Yeah. Make sure my dogs live really long.
I will right the wrongs that I made back in 2019.
Thank you.
By manifesting the pandemic.
Thank you, Benny.
And then also that will like cleanse you of the longest living dogs comment.
Yes. Oh my God. It was so sad.
Anyways, yeah, be careful what you manifest to the world, people.
Definitely. Well, speaking of manifesting, by the way, it was a big manifesting week this week. Do you know there was like a supermoon on Tuesday?
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, it was the supermoon. It was on Tuesday, and it's the last full moon of summer. It's last month of summer, and we're just in Leo season, you know? So I did some beach manifesting. I went to the beach during the supermoon. I wore my little witch hat.
Nice.
And lit a lucky candle. And then the cops showed up and I was afraid they were going to like it by me, but they didn't.
Witchcraft on my beach?
Yeah.
So then at that point, would you be a sandwich?
Oh my God. Why is that the best pun that I did not think of? What? My mind is blown. I wish I would have taken pictures so I could post them with that caption. Oh, man.
I call upon the four corners of the bread.
Yeah. Speaking of great puns and just kind of good jokes, I think it's time for a quick commercial break. And then we'll come back with our guest for this week, who is a stand-up comedian in the Seattle scene. She's super funny. Her name's Melina Molina. So, yeah, we'll be right back. Thank you, listeners, for sticking around. I'm here with our interview this week. Her name is Melina Molina. She's an amazing comedian in the Seattle scene. She's also a friend of mine. And you can catch her in September at her new variety comedy open mic, which she's starting at The Rendezvous. It's called Kitchen Sink Comedy. You can also follow them on Instagram at Kitchen Sink Mike. And that mic will be on Mondays at 7:30. And just a quick heads up as well, if you love Melina after this interview and you aren't following her already, follow her on Instagram as well. Hi, Melina. How are you doing today?
Hello. I'm doing good. I just came back from not really a run, more of a brisk walk. Yeah, but I'm feeling good.
I love that. Exercise is key. I don't know what it's the key to, but it's the key to something. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your journey into comedy. I know we both kind of started stand up around the same time and you're just killing it now.
Well, thank you for that. So I've talked about this before, but I've always been like a huge comedy nerd. I think since I was maybe in middle school, because my brother got me for my, I think, 12th birthday. birthday, he got me an iPod Touch, but no iTunes gift card. And I had no money of my own because I was a child. So I listened to a lot of comedy podcasts. And that was my introduction into comedy, was through, there was this guy named Scott Aukerman that had this really fun improv comedy podcast called Comedy Bang Bang that was like this like interview podcast where comedians would come on as like characters and he would interview the characters. And that was so fun. And then also, like, I remember Tig Notaro had this really fun podcast called Professor Blastoff that I was obsessed with. And so I was like, I really got into comedy through podcasts initially. And then I got really into late night. Like, I loved Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, and I'm obsessed with Conan. Those were my boys growing up. And so I was really invested in comedy in middle school and high school. And I never really saw myself being a performer in any way, just because all the comedians that I had followed were like all these old white men that I could not relate to in any way, even though I like loved all their work. And I started getting back into comedy, I think in 2020, again, through podcasts. Like, I really, podcasts were huge for me. And I started following a lot of like New York based comedians. And then those were people that I related to a lot more, because a lot of them were like queer folks and like women doing like comedy that represented their lives. And so I really loved that. And then I think around that time was when I found comedian Stephanie Nam. She produced a lot of shows in Seattle, and I went to one of her shows, and I remember just like, I have like a diary entry of the day I went to that show, because it truly changed my life. It was like the first time where I was in a space where I was like, I really just wanted to be a part of this space. I really loved how inclusive and like diverse her shows were, and how much they centered like queer people and like women and people of color. I really loved that. And so I think a couple months later, Stephanie announced that she was doing a stand-up comedy class that I signed up. And that's where we met, was through Stephanie's class. And I just have been doing it ever since. I've really enjoyed the community that Stephanie introduced me to, and that has continued to build, especially over time. I think I've really learned to enjoy comedy when you can find people that you connect with, because that, I think there are some spaces that aren't always that way, and it feels very isolating when you're like a queer person or a marginalized person anyway. So it's nice to have people that you connect with in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Stephanie as well, because she has been so influential in the comedy scene for creating shows and producing mics and just all kinds of things that center queer people, BIPOC people, but people that, you know, you wouldn't see on the stage at classic open mics, just telling their dick jokes, you know, those guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of dick jokes. That's why I don't love going to those spaces anymore. I'm just like, is this really how I want to spend like 2 to 3 hours of my weekday?
Yeah. So I know you're involved with several different mediums for comedy. You do improv, sketch, and stand-up as well. How did they kind of interact for you? Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I would say, I'm very new to improv. I would say it has definitely helped me a lot in my comedy, like even in stand-up. Like, I recently got into improv this past year through like taking Bandit classes, and it's been really fun. It's really helped me personally with my social anxiety, because I'm someone who is in social settings a huge overthinker, and sometimes I will not be as open as I'd like to be, and just like hold a lot of what I would think are usually like funny thoughts. Like, I would hold them inside and just not be as open and expressive as I want to be. And I really love that improv is like a space where you're encouraged to kind of say what's off the top of your head. You know, I really love that about improv. And I would say I really love sketch. I feel like a lot of my love for comedy came through sketch. I was a huge fan of like SNL growing up. I know Portlandia was huge for me, and so was Key and Peele. I remember I would watch a lot of Key and Peele with my brother. That was like, but my brothers were like, we didn't really talk to each other a lot because they were like so much older than me, but that was like one way we connected, was through Key and Peele. So I love sketch comedy a lot. I want to get better at it. Like I definitely have been working on building that muscle, because I think for me, I've just found like it's the form of comedy that I most see myself want to be doing. I think I really just love funny characters, and I want to be able to like write and perform them. And so I definitely want to in the future be able to focus more on sketch. I think that's kind of why I'm like trying to start my open mic and have sketch be a part of it, because I think there should be more spaces in this local comedy scene where we can just, you know, incorporate sketch into our comedy scene a lot more. Cause I think it's, there's a little bit out there, but I would love to see a lot more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So you kind of mentioned liking kooky characters for sketch. Do you have any that come to mind, either original creations or just, you know, famous like SNL, Key and Peele characters or sketches that are just like beloved for you?
Yeah, I would say really any character that Kristen Wiig has done on SNL is always so fun. I think she's just, yeah, I think she's not afraid to go out there. Also, another SNL actor, Vanessa Bayer. I'm really obsessed with her. I feel like I really connect with a lot of her characters, because as someone who's a sometimes pretty anxious person, I feel like she's really good at displaying anxiety of like these characters who have this like pent up energy. And like the minute something goes wrong, like they just like crumble under any sort of pressure. And that's how I feel a lot of the time. And so I really resonate with a lot of Vanessa Bayer's characters because of that. And then also, oh, I'm a huge fan of, there's this comedian who was on SNL and now he has his own sketch show on Netflix, Tim Robinson. I'm obsessed. Like, I was just like, I've been rewatching all the episodes of his show. I really love just his comedic voice of this person. I really connect with Tim Robinson's characters because they're people that want to understand the world, but feel like there's too many rules in society and culture and how we interact with each other. And he's trying to understand, but he doesn't quite get it right. And I feel like as a socially anxious person, like that's how I feel a lot of the time. And so I would say those three people are huge inspirations for me.
I love that. Thank you so much. I'm going to check out his Netflix thing. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
But he is hilarious. So I was also wondering, because you are a writer, you write, you know, all of your own material and stuff. Where do you find inspiration for like a new joke or a new sketch when you are kind of coming up with it?
I think a lot of my inspiration just comes from moments in life where I almost kind of going back to what Tim Robinson, like his kind of what his characters do, where it's like they want to understand the world, but there's just they don't quite have a handle on like how to act as a normal person. And I feel like there's definitely moments in my life where I really resonate with that. Like I have this joke about being jealous of my nephew. And that was genuinely like a real experience for me because I was always the youngest kid. And so I was always the baby of the family. And then you bring this actual baby into the family for the first time. And it's so new to me. And I don't know how to handle like not being the center of attention. And so I genuinely was jealous of my infant nephew. And I didn't know how to handle that. And I think that's, to me, that's so funny of being jealous of someone who doesn't have like fully formed thoughts yet is very funny to me. So yeah, I think just like actual experiences when I have a thought and I'm like, and I just, it almost feels embarrassing to say out loud. And I think sometimes comedy gives me an excuse to say it out loud as in the form of a joke.
Oh, I love that. That's such a good way of like explaining comedy, you know, getting to like let your intrusive thoughts just run wild and people cheer for them. Yeah. I feel like a lot of your comedy really plays on kind of this like Aries attention, like almost diva energy. I was wondering where do you pull that from? Like, is that just always around or is it somewhere like deep within you?
That has always been a part of me, but I think I only recently in the past year like gave myself permission to like let that part out in my performance, because I think it's a very weird combination to be someone who really loves attention but also experiences a lot of anxiety. So it's like, look, sometimes I desperately want people to pay attention to me, but then I don't know what to do with that attention. And so I would say for me, the way I gave myself permission was actually through another comedian. So there's this performer I saw almost a year ago. Her name's Meg Stalter. She was on the TV show Hacks. And she also, I think she initially became popular through like Instagram and, you know, online videos. But she was someone that I felt really inspired by when I saw her, because she had this confidence about her that I just really connected with, because I feel like sometimes as a person who sometimes feels very insecure, I remember growing up, I dealt with a lot of body image issues. And so I think a lot of times, like, I would not want attention because I didn't feel good about myself. And then I saw someone who I felt really looked like me and had this really incredible confidence, and I was, and was still really funny. And I just, for me, like, something really connected when I saw her for the first time. I think just like seeing her gave me a lot of courage. And then I think I really wanted to take inspiration from her. And then also just, I've always had that impulse of being someone who I've always felt kind of overlooked in a lot of places where I wanted to be kind of like a star. And I was always a girl that wanted to the main role, but then didn't get in. I would always be a background character. And I loved the idea of having this almost character who was the person I almost wanted to be. So I think initially, like, it felt, when I was performing that way, it felt very aspirational of like, this is the kind of person I wanted to be. But then over time, like, I just, the act of doing it gave me a lot more confidence that now I feel a lot more connected to that person I aspire to be. And now it does feel like kind of a part of myself.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a great answer. Do you aspire for maybe younger people in a similar position that you were in to hopefully like see you perform and, you know, feel something similar to that? Or what do you hope, you know, young Melinas out there get from seeing you perform?
Yeah, kind of similar to how I felt inspired by Meg. Just, I feel like a lot of people should give themselves the permission to like take up space and like be a diva and be like, yeah, I would hopefully like to create a space where people can feel a lot more confident about themselves, even if they don't fit within like a certain standard. Yeah, that you can definitely like embrace that part of yourself, because I think it was something that I wanted but suppressed for a long time because I didn't feel like I was someone that could, yeah, present myself that way. I love that comedy has given me like an outlet to be able to do that.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. And then I just kind of have one more question, which was, how are you feeling about the Renaissance concert?
Oh my God. Okay. This has been a big part of my life. It's given me a lot of excitement, but a lot of anxiety. So I very impulsively bought tickets to the Renaissance concert the other day because of TikTok. I've been watching so many videos of people filming clips from the tour, and I was just like, I need to be there so bad. And so I bought a ticket the other day, and then I kind of, all my anxious thoughts came flooding afterwards, where it's just like, how am I going to get there? There's going to be so many people and so many lines, like all the things I hate about people. And I just hate being around so many people. And so I'm like mentally and emotionally preparing myself for it. But I knew I needed to do this within my lifetime, because I really just want to say before I die that I've been to a Beyonce concert. And I feel like if I go to any concert of hers, this is the one, like, because I really love the choreography and like the visuals and like the message of like the tour. I think it's really fun and it really resonates with me. And also, like, because of all the TikTok clips, like, I've been memorizing the choreography, and I'm like, I have this skill and I have nowhere to use it. So this also gives me another reason to go. So I will be, for the next month or so, preparing myself for this event. I am rehearsing as much as Beyonce, I believe, for this concert. This is a process for me. And also, we'll see what happens. Cause I'm also going to this, I'm just going by myself. So it'll be a fun experience. I think I'm just gonna like treat myself and just have fun.
I love that. Are you gonna do the dances when you're there?
I hope so. I don't know. I didn't buy like 4 seats because those cost, you know, more than rent. So I bought, we'll see. I don't know what the space around me is going to look like, if I'm going to be hitting other people, if I do anything with my arms or legs. So I hope I have some space, and I might even not do any. I think as long as I know in my heart that I have the choreography down, that might be enough for me.
Yeah, that is amazing. When is the concert that you're going to?
I think it's on September 13th. Yeah. We'll see.
Is it Seattle, or are you traveling for it?
Yeah, it is in Seattle. I'm so stressed about parking. I'm a very anxious driver just because I'm like still pretty new to it. So I'm like not super confident in my skills. And then the idea of driving there and back is giving me a lot of fear, but I might just take the bus because it'll give me an excuse to drink, because I think if I drink, I'll have maybe a little more fun.
Yeah, definitely. That's always my take with concerts. Is it at Climate Pledge?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. The light rail goes pretty close to there, too, if you get off at, like, Stadium Station.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for any of the listeners that are hoping to find a way to the Renaissance concert in September. But, yeah, that's amazing. And thank you so much again for joining me for this conversation. I'm so excited that I'm on the Melina bandwagon now before you're selling out like Beyonce does. Yeah, so... again, thank you so much for talking. Is there anything else you'd like to add before I wrap up?
Nothing else for me. I'm good.
Okay, awesome. And then again, listeners at home, if you're interested in trying your hand at any kind of comedy, check out Kitchen Sink Comedy. That's going to be in September at the Rendezvous on Mondays at 7:30. You can follow them on Instagram at Kitchen Sink Mike, and there'll be more information there about how to sign up. And you can also follow Melina on Instagram for just like the best Instagram lives ever. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, check it out.
What a great conversation that was.
Hilarious.
Yeah, thank you. Benny still hasn't listened to it.
I'm slapping my knee over here.
For real though, definitely check out Melina on Instagram. Check out her new open mic. Let's get to the news, Benny. We have got a lot to talk about. First, we were going to talk a little bit about that new movie, the new documentary.
Oh, yeah. The Sound of Freedom. Controversy and stuff like that. So before I reveal this information, tell the audience what you already know about The Sound of Freedom.
Yeah. Okay. So what I know, what I learned from TikTok, because that's where I get all my information. It's this documentary, and like the guy that made it is like low-key a QAnon conspiracy theorist guy. It's not like entirely factually accurate. And then it's also like comes up as being sold out in all of these theaters. But then if you actually go to it, it's like completely empty. And so people were thinking that it was like, you know, something where the movie, the studio was like buying out all the theaters. But it might be related to, at the end of the movie, they have like a QR code that comes up and like tells people to pay it forward by buying a ticket, so that like somebody who can't afford to go see this truth that they need to see can go to the theaters and see it. But then like nobody does that, you know, like nobody goes to AMX and it's like, can they get one free ticket if somebody paid for a ticket and they're not going to show up? You know what I mean? Like that's just weird. So yeah, all of these shows are sold out and it's making it like look like it's a big box office success. That's what I know about it. Oh, and then it's about like human trafficking.
Yes, specifically anti-child sex trafficking. That's the crux right there. And there's been a huge amount of like controversies. Anytime anything happens in the theater, you know, these people will make controversies about how they're trying to shut it down, you know, they're trying to hide the truth. But yeah, it's a whole documentary about anti-child sex trafficking.
Which is something that like, I feel like Christians and conservatives feel very, very strongly about.
Oh like, yeah, they feel very strongly about it. Especially this specific person, Sound of Freedom funder Fabian Marta, arrested for child kidnapping.
Wait, what? The call is coming from inside the house. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, yes.
What the
fuck? Projection isn't just happening in the theater with, you know, the film being projected to a screen.
Oh, that's a good. You are on fire with the puns today, Benny. So wait a minute, though. Why would you even do that? Why would you make a movie like about the crime that you're committing? You know what I mean?
It's a self-report.
Yeah. When did this news come out?
Today.
Damn. Breaking news on the podcast. Okay. Today also being Friday the 4th.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Today's Friday, August 4th. So by the time you hear this podcast, there's probably more information on this story.
Mm-hmm.
Continue, Benny.
Like you said, the call is coming from inside the house. Some of the people associated with this anti-child sex trafficking documentary, I don't know as far as what the whole like context behind child kidnapping is.
Yeah.
With this specific person. But it is very ironic, I guess, if you could call it that.
Oh my God. Like, fucked up, though. So is this person, like, making money off of this? I get, you said it's just accusations at this point. It hasn't been convicted yet?
They were a funder for the documentary, and they've been arrested. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's just like when Matt Gaetz says that gays are groomers.
Oh, and then he's a groomer?
And then he's a groomer.
Yeah. But I feel like that's kind of different because they're like projecting onto like the LGBTQ community. You know, they're like not this movie. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Are they saying that like queer people are child traffickers?
I had to watch the movie, but I would not be surprised if they included a little tidbit about that. But it is an inaccurate documentary. And I think it's mostly made to fearmonger and to kind of build off of that kind of like liberals and gay people are trying to groom your children.
Yeah.
They're taking them over the border to turn them trans.
Definitely. There was when I was in high school and first became a bleeding liberal, there was this girl that I went to school with. I'll use her name. Danny can cut that out. I think we'll get in trouble, but she...
That's partly why I don't go by my government name of Bethany.
No, fucking way. Oh, I thought you were going to say... Well, I was going to be like, No.
My government name is Bethany. And I have yet to, like, meet a Bethany who isn't religious. If you go to, like, Urban Dictionary's, like, definition of Bethany, it's not fun, you know? Oh. And then only that people, whenever they make a joke about, like, what you're talking about, like a...
Yeah.
They'll sometimes use Bethany and always makes me cringe because I'm just like, that's not me, you guys.
I know a queer Bethany. I don't think she's religious. I don't know her that well. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, when I think Bethany, you're right. I think like Bethany Hamilton from the Soul Surfer, who's like a massive transphobe. We stand the shark on this podcast. Me and Ash talk about this.
But yeah, that's one of the many reasons why I go by Benny.
I love that. I love Benny as a name. We're getting so far off topic, but I love it.
I do this every single time. I can't stay on one subject.
Two gay ADHD people on a podcast.
I hope people are here for the chaos.
I think they are. Okay, I gotta go back to my story. Because this is pure chaos, dude.
Yes.
So, okay, so let's check. We would get in fights in our AP US history class because we had to do Socratic seminars, which just turned into like debates about human rights. Like this girl legit said that we should repeal the separation of church and state because she thinks that you can't be moral without being religious.
Oh gosh, I've heard that argument. My grandfather has given me that same exact argument.
My dad too. Yeah. So that,
and I'm just like, okay, good to know that without, you know, a belief in God, you'd be out here clubbing people over the head.
Yeah, exactly. This chick, okay, her family, to like paint the picture better, they breed dogs for money. And her mom has gone on Facebook rants against rescuing animals because it like apparently hurts the breeding business because so many people are out here rescuing dogs. And this is a literal dog whistle for racism right now, but she's like, they're bringing dogs in from other countries. They're bringing them in from Mexico. That's why the shelters are so full. Yeah, so this chick is from this family. It's insane.
Rescue dogs are taking our jams.
Yeah, exactly. So weird. And I'm like, just stop breeding your mini Australian shepherds. They're all inbred anyway. Okay, let's just take it back to like when we were talking about Christians and crazy Christian people that are like super into sex trafficking for some weird reason. That's a really good segue into the drag queen story.
Yeah. So our writer, Teddy, came up with a really, really great report on some recent Christian news where a drag queen's work is now topping the iTunes Christian music charts.
Yeah, this is crazy. And I'm super proud of Teddy and the SGN for this reporting because this is as close to breaking news as we get, I think. Like, them posted about it yesterday, posting about it today. Aside from what you've heard on this podcast several times, not all Christians are assholes. Some Christians are good people. Some Christians are members of the LGBTQ community. And that actually was the case with Christian singer Derek Webb, who's a frontman for a band called Cadman's Call, recorded a song that was pretty affirming to people in the LGBTQ community, and it featured drag queen Flamie Grant. Flamie Grant is also a worship leader at the day job, I guess. A lot of conservative Christian fans were just disgusted by this collaboration. They said on Twitter that it was the sign of the end of days. People got really, really upset. And so Flamie Grant came forward with a Christian rock song that went viral, and everybody started streaming it, kind of as like an SVU to the haters, you know? Mm-hmm. And now it is topping the charts. It is number one on Christian radio charts, which is kind of amazing, kind of gives me hope in the world a little bit.
Yeah. I was talking about this kind of subject recently with somebody, that we're getting to a point where, you know, people have to start making decisions, because they, you know, we have one of the most gay generations to ever be out, you mm-hmm. know, and these people always existed, but now yeah. they feel safe enough to come out. And now, you know, most everybody knows somebody who's gay, and we're coming to a crossroads where you have to choose whether to accept this person that you love or, you know, likely not have this person in your life anymore. And so there is a lot of people who are accepting and affirming and have realized that queer people are worth supporting. Because at the end of the day, I think most people are going to choose love, much like what, you know, Jesus promoted. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't take anything from you to love somebody, right? I don't know. I think we talked about this a little bit last week, too.
Yeah. We keep bringing up the religious trauma.
That side. Religiously traumatized people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I grew up listening to Christian music on the radio. Like, that was all my dad played on the radio when I was between the ages of like 10 and 15. So, this definitely hit home for me, especially because it's hard to explain. But I feel like it is so important to have this in those settings, to have a song by a drag queen of all people too. It's not like it's just a queer person, but it's a drag queen, which is, you know, so many drag queens are being hated on, having laws written about them right now. And yeah, to have that,
it's considered controversial.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. So to have that on the, you know, stations, these radio stations played in churches where, you know, people claim to love everybody, it's a good test to see, like, are you gonna back that? But also, like, I don't know. I think it's just good exposure for mm-hmm. queer people, queer Christians. Queer Christians exist out there, as they should. You shouldn't have to choose between, you know, pieces of yourself.
Yeah. I mean, we also talked about this with our reporting on what the Pope recently said.
Yeah.
Where he was talking to a trans youth who asked about the inner conflict that they feel between their trans identity and their Catholic faith. It can be difficult depending on your situation and what your church is like and everything like that. But you can find a balance between those things. It might mean that you have to, like, find, you know, a different community, a different church that's accepting and affirming. It might mean that you might have to disagree with a lot of people on some of the accepted religious tenets or teachings or what have you, or interpretations.
Yeah, I think this is some good news. It's a good news to end on, too. We stand Flamie Grant, for sure. Mm-hmm. I love that her album is also called Bible Belt Baby. And it just, like, you listeners at home need to look up a picture of this. We can't show you it right now. Check out the article, because there's a picture in the article. Mm-hmm. It's just so Dolly Parton. Is mm-hmm. that a good way to describe it?
Yeah. It's definitely Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I like it. And it's about time people catch up, you know? I think this is great. And I've said this many of times before. Jesus was definitely queer. So, you know.
Definitely.
Get your head in that game, people. Jesus was queer. Jesus was poly and pansexual. Yeah.
Everything at once.
Yeah, everything at once. Exactly.
But you know what else it's also time for?
What?
The end.
Okay, it's not the end of days, but it is the end of this podcast. So yep. Thank you for sticking around. Thanks to Melina. Thanks to Benny. Thanks to Dan for editing this. Yeah, Benny, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of. I guess just, you know, whatever is best for yourself, be that.
Yes, I love that. And have a great week and kiss your dogs.
Radio SGN is hosted by Benny Loy and Lindsay Anderson and edited by Daniel Lindsley. The music for the show is provided by TRG Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org. This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.